So last week, we talked about, we began by reflecting on Lynn's sermon from September 1st on the Great Commission. That's the area, the scripture, where we find Jesus' instructions to his disciples and to all of us to go and to make disciples and to baptize and to teach. And we said that we looked last time at one of the whys that we might want to follow that instruction. There was probably more than one why, but the one we looked at last week we found in Luke 15, where we learn that when the lost is found, or when the lost is returned to whom it belongs, there is rejoicing in heaven. And I said that I think rejoicing in heaven is pretty good motivation to step out in faith and obedience. And next we looked at a how, the how of inviting. And I told you my story about, I'm going to get this right, pho. Did I do better this week? No? Okay. Pho, pha, pho, whatever. I told you my story about that. What's more important is that Uriah told you his story about making a deal with God, about being invited to something three times. And if you missed Uriah's story, or any time you want to catch up on the sermons, you can always check that out on our media tab of our church website. The address is on the bottom of your bulletin. So while we're on the topic of invitations, I do want to pause and tell you about two others. In the lobby at the table that's near the steps, there are some flyers. The first one is for the chicken barbecue, which is this coming Saturday. This coming Saturday. And if it seems weird to invite people to our chicken barbecue, which is actually a fundraiser for local and worldwide missions, let me just remind you that when people come up the hill for that drive-through chicken barbecue, not only do they get our chicken, which is delicious and is famous locally here, they also get to meet friendly people. They get sent off with a smile. They get to see what happens when a group of us who kind of like each other and like working together work together. So I think it's about more than just the fundraising part of it. Consider inviting your friends. And about that group of friendly people, you know where I'm going, right? I would like to invite you to be a part of that group. You can help with the chicken barbecue on Friday night. There are prep tasks. And on Saturday, if you're one of those people who wants to know what is needed most, the answer is usually cleanup tasks. You could even like bring your whole encounter group and clean chicken boxes together. That would be so fun, right? But we could use your help with a variety of tasks. So later today, Carl Lehman will be standing over there by the steps waiting to help connect you to a job that you can enjoy. Because people tend to say, hey, when I came and worked at the barbecue, I got to know this person who I hadn't known before, and that was really cool for me. So come and help with that as well. The second flyer is about Fall Fest. Surprise, we are having our first ever Fall Fun Fest this year. Many of you have heard of Hilltop Fun Fest, and you're thinking, how do these two compare? Let me tell you how they compare. Fall Fest is a much smaller event, okay? Shorter time frame, fewer options, fewer volunteers, but still a time that focuses on sharing Christ's love by providing hospitality and creating community. So that'll be from 5 to 7. Just like Hilltop Fun Fest, everything there is free, so there'll be food options like hot dogs and caramel apples and fruit kebabs and s'mores and freshly pressed cider. There will be activities like our Hilltop Hayride is coming back. We're going to do scarecrow making. We have lots of kinds of games. So pick up these flyers also today and use them for personal invitations, and also use them to just leave, you know, at the preschool sign-in table or your break room or whatever. We're even going to have a pair of jugglers who come, the DKers, who are a lot of fun and will share a Bible story with us in a super engaging way. So that'll be a good time. So those are a couple other opportunities while we're on that topic of invitations. You know, last week we said that inviting people is about saying, hey, there's this thing that I think is good, and maybe you'll think it's good too, so come check it out. And this week I want to remind you that that's true, but another thing that happens when you invite people is you say to them, I want to be with you. You matter. In essence, you say to them, let's be neighbors. Let's do this thing together. And that idea of being neighbors is what takes us to our scripture for today, Luke 10, verses 25 to 37. I will have scriptures on the screen here as we're going through it, but I also really welcome you to look it up on your own app or in the Bible you brought or in the Pew Bible, because that lets you see any parts of it that you want, not just the ones that I have up on the screen at the time. But Luke 10, verse 25, we meet a smart guy. Now, if you, in your encounter group, if you select to do certain ones of the discussion questions that will be available to you, you might get to explore why we could call him a smart guy in many connotations. But for today, I'm going to say one of the reasons that he is a smart guy is just that he is super good at summaries. Because this smart guy comes to Jesus and says, "What must I do to inherit eternal life?" And Jesus turns the question back to him and says, "Well, what is written in the law?" And in this case, that is referring to the scriptures of the Old Testament that would have been available. And instead of this smart guy rattling off all that he knows or describing the whole trajectory of God's people in the Old Testament or the whole of the Levitical law that gets down to an awful lot of nuts and bolts or even the whole of the Ten Commandments, he boils it down to two. Love God, love neighbor. Now, some of you know that Jesus also boils it down to these same two. There are two different scriptures where that happens. In Matthew 22 and in Mark 12, we see Jesus saying that the two most important commandments are love God and love neighbor. And it's not to say that nothing else in the Old Testament is important or is worthy of note. It's simply to say that if we do these two things well, we will have accomplished the other instructions that are shared in the Old Testament. If we love God and love neighbor well, we will have obeyed the law. So I like this guy. I call him a smart guy because he boils it all down to just the essence. And then comes the question, well, who is my neighbor? Well, I want to warn you of something. If you've heard very many sermons, you've probably heard this one, okay? This is not super original sermon material, right? Some of you are like, yep, here we go. But here's the thing. Throughout life, we come into contact with different people. We change where we are, we change where we work, we change where we live, we change what our hobbies are, and we keep coming into contact with different groups of people, and so I think it is worth our while to come back at least every couple of years, and say, who is my neighbor? And that's what we're going to be looking at today. This question is asked to Jesus, and Jesus responds with a story. The story sounds like it's going to start like a good joke. It says, a priest, a Levite, and a Samaritan walk down a road. Okay? A priest, a Levite, and a Samaritan walk down a road. And on their way down the road, they go individually, by the way, one at a time. One at a time, they pass by a man who has been robbed and beaten and left laying for dead on the side of the road. We know that all three of these people see him. Now, let me do a timeout here and talk about this priest, Levite, and Samaritan. Most of us get the priest thing. We got that. But Levite and Samaritan, if you would like the first century Cliff Notes version of Levite and Samaritan, it might go like this. A Levite is a person who was born into the right family to imply a particular call to ministry. And a Samaritan, this is how Jesus' listeners would have heard it. I'm not suggesting we talk about people this way, okay? A Samaritan is a half-breed who has weird religious views and everybody knows you stay away from. So that might be a first century Cliff Notes version of the way Jesus' audience would have heard a priest, a Levite, and a Samaritan. One by one, they all see this man. And we know they see the man because two of them cross to the other side of the road. But the Samaritan comes down the road and he recognizes the man as his neighbor. Not as his neighbor because they live near each other, and not as his neighbor because they have something in common. and not as his neighbor because they've met before. He recognizes him as a neighbor simply because he recognizes him as a fellow person with a need. And so he responds to this man who he chooses to treat as a neighbor. I actually wonder if it's possible that the Samaritan's experience with otherness, the Samaritan's experience with his own reality of rejection and of not fitting in and of being treated poorly, might have really opened his heart all the more to respond with compassion to this particular other person he found on the road. Now, despite the initial question that comes from the smart man, Jesus' life and Jesus' teachings tell us that following him is not about checking off boxes on a task list. It's just not the way he is, the way he has this sense of being, and the way he invites us into being. He says that it is a heart posture instead. And Jesus uses a story to explain this heart posture. But yes, in this story, he also does demonstrate some things that we can do, that we see the Samaritan did. As we look at what the Samaritan did, we find Jesus describing the heart posture of this is what love God, love neighbor looks like. This is what being a good neighbor looks like. This is how you open your eyes, as we just sang, and open your heart to someone who could really use a neighbor. Someone who might be crying out, please, won't someone be my neighbor? Or someone who has shut off their heart so much that they don't even know they want a neighbor. Jesus uses this story to show us how we can say to people, I'm here, I see you, won't you be my neighbor? So he shares what the Samaritan did. And what the Samaritan did begins with this very first thing. He saw the man. He saw him. The first two apparently saw him too, but this man saw him. Now, we see people every day, right? We see grocery clerks and UPS drivers and spouses and teachers and students, and we see literal neighbors, and we see hitchhikers, and maybe we see adversaries, and we see all kinds of people. But do we really see them? This man sees the man on the side of the road. And the next thing that he does is he responds to the compassion in his heart, and he goes to him. He sees him, and he immediately goes to him. He does not fret and wonder, what on earth can I do to be helpful to this person? He does not call his congressional representative, although I'm not saying that's a bad thing. He does not pray for the man, although I'm certainly not saying that's a bad thing. He instead sees the man, and he goes to him. He sees, truly sees, and he goes. His heart is filled with compassion. He begins to apply first aid. The oil and the wine that we read of, these were things that he would have had on hand that have medicinal properties. And then he picks up the man, which, given the circumstances, could be a little gross, right? But he picks up the man, and he puts him on his very own donkey, and he takes him to an inn. And when he gets to the inn, he cares for him. He gives of his own labor to provide care to him. On the way to the inn, and when they arrive at the inn, and when they are at the inn, they would have been seen together. He allows this man in need to be seen with him, and him to be seen with the man in need. After all, they are neighbors now, right? And then he sees this task of caring for this neighbor as not being done, but as being only well begun. He invests his own resources to see to it that the care continues, and he promises to return, offering more of his own time, more of his own efforts, even if necessary, more of his own money to ensure that the neighbor is cared for. This Samaritan shows us that to neighbor, by the way, did you know neighbor can be a verb? I looked it up. Actually can be. To neighbor is to keep our eyes open, to stay alert and not be distracted. To neighbor is to live with margin. Can I just be honest with you? I'm not so good at that. I love that there are still people here that are calling me to a higher level of that living with margin thing. When I think about why the first two didn't stop, I have to wonder, did they not stop because they had a schedule to keep? Did they not stop because they thought somebody else would? Did they not stop because they were wearing their best clothes? Did they not stop because they have no compassion in their heart? We don't know exactly, but the temptation to just criticize their choice, I want to hold us back from that a little bit, because the fact is that sometimes we also are not ready to accept those divine appointments, right? So the Samaritan shows us that to neighbor well is to keep our eyes open and to live within enough margin that we can respond to those divine appointments, those times that God says, I'm putting this in your schedule today too. Guess what? I need you here in this way. He shows us these important factors of neighboring well. To neighbor well is to really encounter, as the Samaritan does. And our ability to encounter neighbors is fueled by our encounters with God and our encounters with others who challenge and encourage us. So, at the end of the story, Jesus allows the smart man to decide for himself which one of these demonstrated neighborliness. And then, after the smart man answers, he sends them forward with encouragement to do the same. And as we so often see with Jesus, he doesn't get into, did you do that before? Why didn't you do that before? Could you have done better with that? No, he instead presses forward into a present and future looking that simply says, go and do likewise. It's interesting if we back up now and look back at verse 30 to see what we know about the man who had been robbed and was laying on the side of the road. It doesn't tell us anything about the condition of his heart. We don't know if he followed God. We don't know if he knew the scriptures. We don't know if he was critical of the religious leaders of the day, or if he was following the religious leaders of the day, or if he was one of the religious leaders of the day. We only know that he needed a neighbor. And we know that the neighborly response that came went well beyond first aid. It included personal service. It included, quite literally, getting one's hands dirty. It included sharing resources. It included a plan for further relationship. As far as we can tell from this text, the Samaritan acted purely with the desire to love a neighbor, purely with the desire to offer that care. We don't know that there was any religious conversation happening. We don't know whether or not there would have been even able to be, given this context and given these characters. But we see here that by seeing, truly seeing, and by going, and by serving, and by continuing relationship, we are indeed forwarding the kingdom of God. We are indeed responding to that original Great Commission message that we started with on September 1st. Sometimes that go, make disciples, baptize, teach, is really about go and love well, right? In fact, it's always about go and love well. But this story reminds us of the key role that comes with neighboring well, with living with eyes that are seeing, that are able to see, and a heart that is ready to neighbor. Love God, love neighbor. They're two sides of the same coin. If we love God well, we will love neighbor. And we love neighbor just because God's love is spilling out of us. So we neighbor well. So, of course, we get to think about who is your neighbor. If you put yourself on your figurative road that you travel anyway, okay, the story talks about something that happened in one's normal daily path. So put yourself on that figurative road and think, is there perhaps an elderly person who is lonely along your road? Is there a parent who is exhausted? Is there a teacher who feels attacked? Is there a business owner who says, you don't understand all the strains that I am under? Is there a teen who feels excluded? Is there someone suffering from addiction who feels like a failure again? Is there an immigrant who feels unwanted. Maybe you, me, all of us have felt some of these things. And maybe God uses that too to open our eyes and increase our compassion. In each of these cases, your neighbor needs the hope of Jesus, yes, but they also just need to be neighbored. They need someone to say, I see you. Won't you be my neighbor? And yes, I do submit to you that the Samaritan learned from Fred Rogers, right? Okay, maybe not. But I think that we can realize that the popularity of Fred Rogers today and the documentaries that are happening and all that is a real message that says, come on, folks, the world needs the Good Samaritan. The world needs all of us to neighbor well. We all encounter these people who need us to say, I see you, I care, and you matter. Won't you be my neighbor? So how might we neighbor well in those circumstances? We talked last week about invitations in one specific sense, but what about an invitation to your house for dinner or for a campfire or for a game night? What about an invitation to share a cup of coffee? What about an offer to help? What about chicken barbecue dinner delivered to someone's door? Wonder where you could get that. What about a casual, headphone-free, cell phone-free conversation on the way to class? What about just an encouraging email for someone who's feeling attacked by others? Or a loaf of bread or a phone call? What about a listening ear and a warm response? Maybe a shared laugh or maybe shared tears. Because I think today, sustained direct attention is the most precious gift we can offer to people as we try to neighbor well. Last week, I asked you to grab your pencil and find some white space and write down the name of someone that you could invite. And it's been interesting to me to hear stories. You're not required to tell me your stories, but it is super fun when people are like, hey, guess what happened, right? I've heard stories of people who proceeded pretty much as they had planned, so that's cool. I've also heard stories where things went differently than planned. Somebody said she got out her bulletin and she wrote down the name of a friend, and immediately as she wrote it, the name of another friend with the same name, the picture of another friend with the same name came into her mind. And before she had left the building here, she had a contact from that friend with the same name. She said, all right, God, I got it. We can work with this name, but you got somebody else in mind, right? And so she engaged with that person, and then she said, I'm gonna learn from Uriah. I'm gonna engage, then I'm gonna step back. Because Uriah told me it's not all about one person. And he said, hands and feet don't have eyes, so I might not see the result. I'm just gonna be obedient. And we talked about last week that we are called to obedience, not called to success, right? So another person told me about an invitation to a new friend who said, you are the second person who's invited me to that same church. And another person told me about an extended conversation that she was in with someone who said, yeah, I don't believe in any God, but I actually really like hearing about other religions. I'm always curious to hear about that. I'm like, seriously, who has these conversations, right? So it was interesting this week to see that people responded in the way they had planned, and people also responded just by saying, all right, God, if you're going to open that door, I'm going to walk right through it. And I think obedience, stepping out in faith, saying we will be hands and feet even though we don't have eyes, involves both. It involves the thinking ahead and the planning ahead and saying, I'm going to listen now, God. What do you want me to do? I'm here to listen. But it also involves saying, that is not what I thought you had in mind, but okay, here we are, and I will move forward through that door. So it's been really exciting to hear of ways that you are doing that. So, of course, I invite you to take that pencil again. It's in the pew rack in front of you. I invite you to find the white space, the empty space on your bulletin. I guess it's ivory space. Or take out the notepad in front of you. We're going to have a bit of a break because I want you to imagine that you are in that conversation with Jesus. And you say, well, Jesus, who is my neighbor? And I'm just going to give you a minute to listen. You as an individual can ask, okay, Jesus, who is my neighbor? And as you get a response, you can write down the name. You can tear it off, put it in your paper, in your pocket, knowing that you intend this week to neighbor well to that person. You will find an opportunity to do as the Good Samaritan did and say, I see you. You matter. Won't you be my neighbor? Love God. Love neighbor. Encounter both together.